I want to make special mention of a group of people, those who were the volunteers yesterday for the Special Olympics, I think deserve a special word of commendation. Were any of you serving as volunteers? If you would you please stand so that we might see you? All the volunteers for the Special Olympics yesterday. Well, congratulations to you, and we thank you for letting your light shine. What a beautiful way of giving a cup of cold water to some of God's little children. And I'm just thankful for your participation in it. I'm also thankful for the upcoming yard sale. When is that scheduled for? Friday and Saturday of this week, is it? Friday and Saturday of this week. Now, that's taking place on campus, and they're hoping to raise quite a bit of money to send to South America to provide some finances for the care of those street children that Jim Stanley told us about some weeks ago. I would like to urge all of us resident members to follow the example of these young people and go home to your garages, to your houses this afternoon, and look for items of value and then bring them to the student center. Is that right? It could be brought to the student center? Okay. Bring it to the student center. The room on the west end of the student center is being used as a focal point to gather this these materials and whatever value that you have, tools, clothing, whatever. Would you go home? I've been looking, and we're going to go home and find some things and bring them. I want to have a part in that, and I'd like to urge every local resident member to do the same thing. And then the sale will take place on Friday and Saturday of this week. I want to congratulate you young people for that very practical way of providing assistance to those who are less fortunate than we. In Matthew, the 19th chapter and verse 5, the text from which we've been studying recently in our series on marriage and the home, there's a statement that we want to notice this morning as we conclude our study. The statement is simply, "The two shall become one." The two shall become one. Now, what does that mean? There are two or three options, and probably not options, but two or three facets of the meaning. One, primarily and initially, it's one in the sexual union. One in the sense of two bodies becoming united in the sexual union. And this is stated even in terms of a man's joining himself to a prostitute. 1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter and verse 16, says that he that is joined to a prostitute is one flesh. For it is written, the two shall become one. So initially, the expression means one sexually. But then it also has another meaning in a practical, physical, and literal sense, in that the two shall become one in the fruit of that union, the offspring. When a child is produced by two bodies being brought in union with each other, the two literally become one flesh in that sense. And then there's another sense that I think it means ultimately. I believe that the two shall become one really means oneness in the sense of completeness of personality. Completeness of personality to which both partners are called in this union. Because it must be admitted that we as human individuals, fallen from God, are in that state incomplete personalities. There is no complete personality outside of God. And every time someone falls away from God, he or she becomes an incomplete personality. And so in marriage, we see a microcosm of the kingdom of God. We see a small fulfillment and a partial realization of what God really intends to be done as we are brought back into relationship with him. Let me ask, do you know what is the full, complete personality to which God would bring us? Do you have any way of defining it? Do you have any conception or preconceived idea about it. Jesus gives us a full, broad-sided view of the fullness of personality to which God intends to bring us. In Matthew, the 22nd chapter, verses 35 through 40, he mentions these two aspects of the full personality. These are broad, but they are all-inclusive, and they are complete in the sense that they tell the whole story. Upon being asked what is the greatest commandment in the law, in verse 37, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And a second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Jesus says on these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. Well, now, when Jesus gave, and you may not look at that as being a description of a full personality, but that's what it is. He's really saying, this is the full, well-rounded personality. Love God, which has been called the vertical association or vertical relationship, and love your fellow man, love your neighbor. That's the horizontal relationship. Seen in its perfection, it can be visualized and viewed in the cross of Jesus Christ, and it is in Him on the cross that we see the perfect, full, well-rounded personality of a person submitted and yielded to God. He loved God totally, and he loved his fellow man without reservation. These two units, or these two qualities, were brought together in unity in Jesus' death on the cross and were demonstrated there in its fullest and most complete demonstration. So we find the full personality in Jesus of Nazareth and seen perfectly in his death on the cross. Now it says that on these two personalities, or on these two qualities, on these two aspects of personality, all the law and the prophets hang. Now what Jesus is saying there is that all true religion hangs on loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving your neighbor as you love yourself. There isn't anything else left after you have learned to bring these two together and focus them in one heart. True religion has been accomplished. But whenever you look at it like that, then what we're saying is that all true religion really is the bringing back to God of the individual in a perfectly well-rounded personality. It is the restoring of human beings to the personality of God, which is our own human personality in its untainted, undestroyed form. Because we were made in the likeness of God's own image, you see. We were made in His image, in His personality, in His mindset. All of this is what we were created in the likeness of. And so whenever we fall away and then are to be brought back, and that's what the word religion means, it means to bind back to the former, to bind back to something. So we see that the human personality, which in essence is really the divine personality if it is perfect and complete, the fullness of that is loving God and loving your fellow man. Now that's what Paul mentions in Ephesians, the 4th chapter and verse 13, where he says that we are to grow up into Him, into the fullness of His personality, into mature manhood, that we might all attain to the full stature of Jesus Christ. That's what he's talking about. And when you have arrived at the full stature of the personality of Jesus Christ, you will love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and you'll love your neighbor as you love yourself. Now you may say, well, I'm so glad to hear that, and I've got that all down pat. Now, sit down. Well, I wish it were that simple. But what we've just talked about is the most difficult and prolonged task that the Christian individual can ever approach. You know why? Because we tend, and I'm not talking about heredity and environment, we won't get into that argument, but we tend naturally, either by heredity or environment, we tend to be one way or the other in our personality. We're not complete. You tend either to be predominantly vertical, or you tend to be predominantly horizontal. You tend to either be more vertical or rigid, or else you tend to be more horizontal and lax. Now, let me describe these two for you, if you will, and I want you to see where you lie in these two extremes, perhaps, and maybe you're more balanced than others, but it's all a matter of being relatively more balanced or relatively more out of balance, because none of us is perfectly balanced in this respect. Those who it'll call the verticals, those who are God-oriented, they are very rigid. They're very disciplined. They're very unyielding. And I'm going to paint these in the extreme now. These people are those who are very hard on themselves and hard on other people. As far as we'll call them God-oriented, because they consider themselves to be right-oriented. Always standing for what's right. We might call them here comes the judge. These are the here comes the judge people. And by the way, in matters of money, they want to pay their debts exactly the amount that's owed, exactly on time. They don't want to get it there any earlier. They don't want it to be any more than what they owe, but they want it to be what they owe. They're going to be hard on themselves. And if you owe them some money, paying them 3 days late isn't good enough. They want it on the day that it's due. And if you owe them $5, paying them $4.95 is not sufficient. They want the $5. That's what you owe, that's when you owe it, and that's how I want it. That's the way I do for myself, he says, and that's what I expect of you. Well, all right, that's one view of them. You want to know how that person's bedroom looks? I know how his bedroom looks. Everything is exactly in place. Everything. All of his socks are lined up on this side of the drawer, and it's probably marked socks. And all of his underwear is over here, and it's marked undies. And then his shirts, and they're marked shirt, and there's never any dust on anything. And his shoes are always shine, and they're always, you never will find them sitting like this or like this. They're always just like that. You know the person. That's Mr. Here Comes the Judge. That's Mr. Vertical. And my goodness alive, they've got some good qualities about them. But my goodness alive, they'll drive you up the wall if you happen to be one of these horizontals. Now, let's look at the horizontal a moment. Who is he? Well, he's kind of a let's let it slide, Clyde. Just, you know, it's all right. If he wants to get your payment back to you, if he owes you some money, well, he'll get it back into you maybe next week if it's owed this week. And he may be very free to just say to you, well, I don't have the $5. I've got $4.95 or $4.75. Well, that'll be all right, won't it? And I'll bring you the quarter later. See you. Well, he really isn't all that strict on himself. And he's not all that strict on other people. You want me to tell you how his bedroom looks? Looks like a tornado hit it. All the time. I had somebody in my office the other day talking about how, of all things, you ended up, she did, she was one of these more vertical people, very vertical evidently, and she ended up with a roommate, and guess who the roommate was? Miss Horizontal of 1980. And here these two people were, locked in that close confine of a dorm room, Miss Vertical and Miss Horizontal. What a mistake, you'd think. And yet you might not be aware of what really is going on. Let's notice, after we've noticed these two extremes, I want you to turn to Matthew, the fifth chapter, and let's look at the fourth and fifth beatitude. Now, you may think, well, now surely this doesn't have anything to do with that, but I think it does. The fourth and fifth beatitudes are found in verses 6 and 7, and they are the very center of the Beatitudes. There are 8 Beatitudes. 4 and 5 are the center Beatitudes. They couldn't be any more in the center unless there had been just 7 Beatitudes, then the fourth one would have been the center. But there are 8 Beatitudes, and numbers 4 and 5 are the center Beatitudes. Here they are. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for rightness or righteousness. And then blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Is it just a coincidence? And I can't say, but it is certainly interesting to find at the very center of the Beatitudes, Jesus Christ mentioning this vertical beatitude of hungering and thirsting for what's right, and then being also merciful to those people round about you. I think it's interesting, to say the least. But you say, what are you getting at? How does all this apply to marriage?
I've drawn here
see if that'll get up on there a bit. That thing worked earlier. Just turn that thing up a bit more.
Yeah.
That's good. I've drawn this out, and those of you who have considered this principle before will be aware of it. The others of you will not. But it does good to look at it. This is called a grid. And a grid test is a rating given to people after certain questions are asked them and after answers are given. The grid answers, or the grid test, is that which it shows which way you lean. Whether you're more vertical and you find yourself being maybe a 10-person vertically and a 2-person horizontally, or you may find that you're a 10-person horizontally and you're a 2-person vertically. Well, now, that demonstrates, and this the 10 up here would demonstrate an extreme in that direction, the 10 over here an extreme in that direction. What really is desired is that we be what the dotted line in the middle. What really is a well-rounded personality would be a 10-10 personality. But that's a perfect personality. Only Jesus ever attained that. But you don't have to be perfect in order to be well-balanced. You can be a 5-5 person, you see, and still have the well-roundedness, though not the perfection, but you at least have the well-roundedness that you and I are designed to have as a well-rounded individual. Now, the thing that this has to do with marriage is that at the same time that we are one way or the other, and I'd like for all the verticals, would you, if you tend to be vertical, would you raise your hand? Now, be just honest, and I'm just going to forget about it, but just raise your hand if you tend to be vertical more than you do horizontal. Let me see your hands, please. All the verticals, raise your hands. All right? Now, let's see. All the horizontals who tend to be more... Let's let it slide, Clyde, and you raise your hand. That's what I thought. It usually numbers about 2-1 in favor of the horizontals. Okay. Now, that's not all that bad, that you are one way or the other. You know what's so shocking about this thing as it regards marriage? The vertical will almost invariably marry a what? Oh, a horizontal. Almost invariably, the vertical will marry a horizontal. Well, first of all, we know that opposites attract. In God's arrangement, opposites attract. Male attracts to female. The female is attracted to the male. That's God's arrangement. It is not God's arrangement for a male to be attracted sexually to another male. Now, you realize that. All right, but that's not the lesson this morning. But opposites attract. More than likely, a brunette will marry a what? More often than not, a brunette will marry a blonde. There'll be some variation or difference in the way, even in the coloring of their hair. You can just go on and list the extrovert will marry generally an introvert. But that's getting over into the realm of personality, and we're not going to get there just quite yet, but that's where we're headed. Just as true it is as it is that you will be more generally, personality-wise, either vertically oriented or horizontally oriented, it's also true that you'll marry your personality opposite. God forbid. And yet it's not God forbid, it's God ordained. Do you know why? Because only in the coming together of people who are emotionally and personality-wise opposite, only in that union is there any real chance for there to be a well-roundedness of your personality developed by this union. The two shall become one is the ultimate statement of what happens when you bring a vertical in head-on confrontation with a horizontal, provided they hang in there and see it through to the end. Now, that explains why you're so different from your husband. Bob, that explains why you're so different from your wife. That's right. And don't say, look at all these married folks sitting here trying to, don't be punching her. We're all sitting here trying to play like you know that it's not all that different. Oh, yes, it is. And those of you that have just been married, some of you have been married just a very short time, you say, well, we're just alike. No, you just don't know him yet. And after about 4 or 5 years, you'll find out he's not near as much like you as you thought he was. And what you really did was, in your incompleteness, you selected that one who most nearly complements you and brings you into a fullness of personality. And it is the synthesis that God wants and has planned for your marriage, and it's this that he calls oneness. And here only lies the hope of fullness of personality. And in a person's relationship with another person, no more can you say, that's just the way I am. That expression is a cop-out. That's just the way I am. There aren't any I am people. The only people that God made in this fallen state are people who were designed to become. And there is no static state of humanness that will allow you a communal relationship with another person without there being the willingness to change. You come in there not static. If you do, all you do is create static. You create friction. But when a person is a vertical and he marries a horizontal, the hope is that they will both become, they blend between the two. There are no such things in happy marriages as married singles. Now, this expression has come to be used to describe people who come to be married to someone else, but they each decide to go their own way. If you're like you are when you're married, fine, you stay like that. I'll stay like I am, and we just kind of share the same roof. You go your way, I'll go mine. That's not what God designed for your marriage. Now, a failure to develop this blend of the two personalities results in either divorce or a grit-your-teeth kind of relationship where you just simply grit your teeth, you grit your fists, and you say, I'm going to stay with you if it kills me. Now, that's not a very happy marriage. There are a lot of people who are in that kind of a relationship. Now, but the fact of the matter remains that opposites attract. And a here comes the judge is going to marry a let's let it slide, Clyde. That's right. Now, the only question for the Christian is, what are you going to do about it? It's not a matter of whether. It's a matter of what on earth. What on earth are you going to do about it? What, in the meantime, bridges the gap between Mr. Let's just call him Mr. Let's Let It Slide, Clyde, and Mrs. Here Comes the Judge. Now, I didn't always like that, but we'll let it be like that. I don't know how else to describe it. What bridges the gap between these two people who are so different? Agape love is the only bridge we've got. Turn to 1 Corinthians 13. Let me show you something that's interesting. 1 Corinthians 13 talks about the differences of personality. And I'm going to translate, not translate it, but we're going to look at it in terms of marriage language. We've got to hurry now. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 3. Watch him as he defines these two diverse personalities. In verse 1, all the talking about things among men or angels is not anything without love. Now he says it here, though I speak with the tongues of men and angels but don't have love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And then listen to how he divides these two. All this talk, he says, is not going to accomplish anything. And watch the definition of the personalities. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, what is the most characteristic word that would describe the fixed position of a person who is a here comes the judge? The word all is as nearly clearly defining of it as anything I know. They have all the answers. They are always right. They are all this. They are all that. And the word is used here several times. That's one personality defined here. Look at the other personality in verse 3. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver my body to be burned, that comes as nearly defining and describing the horizontal person. Just give it all away. That's part of being horizontally oriented. Now, I'm not sure that that's what he had in mind at all. But it's, again, interesting that these two kinds of personality would be described before he talks about the bridge of bringing them together. Look at verses 4 through 8 then, and watch the bridge. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It's not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails or never dies or never ends. Now, if you find yourself married and you're a vertical and you're dating, you're married to a horizontal, and you're so very different, how are you going to get by? How are you going to live together? How are you going to tolerate that clod? And how are you going to tolerate her? You do it through love, agape love. But you're asking the question, how can I love someone who is so different from me? Let me just say, first of all, don't wait for the feeling. If you wait for the feeling, you never will love him. It's like getting up in the morning. If you waited until you felt like getting up, you'd probably still been in the bed. You just go ahead and make up your mind. You've got an 8 o'clock class. You make up your mind to get up. You get showered and all. And by the way, before you know it, you feel like going on to class. The same way it is with loving someone who is so different from you. Don't wait for the feeling. The kind of love we've read about doesn't depend on feeling. It depends on will. It's a willing of yourself. It's a giving of yourself volitionally. You simply will yourself to treat that person in the way that that describes in 1 Corinthians 13. Then I want to give you three simple things to do in order to be able to genuinely love that person that you're married to who is so different from you. Number one, pray for him every day. Not this kind of prayer, Lord, change that clod. No, not that. Pray like this, Lord, give this one who is my husband, give him something today that he really would enjoy. Bless his work, bless his play, give him something and relieve some of the pressure. That sort of prayer is what I'm talking about. Pray for him every day. You pray for her the same way every day. Secondly, don't talk to anyone about him behind his back. Don't go to your neighbor or don't go to your girlfriend who also may be having trouble and you, or maybe not having trouble, but you go to her and you just say, you know, and you unload all this garbage about your husband. Don't do that. Do not talk against him or behind his back to someone else. And then third, do something nice for him, something that you know he would really appreciate. Know where he's coming from, know what he really enjoys, and humble yourself to wash his feet and do something really nice for him and do something really nice for her. What you really know she really enjoys, what she wants. Those three things. Pray for him or her every day. Don't talk about him or her behind his or her back, and then do something nice for him or for her, what you think he would really, really appreciate. And then, give it some time. For home ain't a place that gold can buy or get up in a minute. You got to weep to make it home. You got to sit and sigh and watch beside a loved one's bed and know that death is nigh. And in the stillness of the night to see death's angel come and close the eyes of her that smiled and leave her sweet voice dumb. For these are scenes that grip the heart, and when your tears are dried, you find the home is dearer than it was and sanctified. And tugging at you always are the pleasant memories of her that was and is no more. You can't escape from these. You've got to sing and dance for years. You've got to romp and play and learn to love the things you have by using them every day. Even the roses round the porch must blossom year by year before they come a part of you, suggesting someone dear who used to love them long ago and trained them just to run the way they do so they'd get the early morning sun. You've got to love each brick and stone from cellar up to dome. It takes a heap of living in a house to make it home. So give it time. Home isn't a place that gold can buy or get up in a minute. It takes a heap of living in a house to make it home. It takes a heap of living in a marriage before here comes the judge. And let's let it slide, Clyde, become Mr. and Ms. Oneness. But it's there for you. And I'm telling you these things so that you might, first of all, identify why it is you're so different. And then define for you what it is that God has in store for you that's so great. The two shall become one is a promise for those who will follow the instructions of the Lord. We're going to sing this song, and this will capsule the whole process and put out in front of us what it is that we're striving to become like. Oh, to be like the Blessed Redeemer. And we're going to sing it as an encouragement. There may be someone who wants to be encouraged to become a Christian even this morning. There may be someone who would like to make some public statement. Whatever may be your need, and we're asking that you use this opportunity right now while we stand and sing.